Hey, welcome back to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from the campus of West Virginia University, it's a syndicated show that sits squarely at the data-driven decision-making intersection, where data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practice come together. From the people who seem to understand this, the good folks, the staff there, and our host is trying to get his camera all tuned in here perfectly. Nathan, is it Perat? Did I say your name correct?
It's Perat.
Perat. Okay. Well, hurrah for Perat here, and I'm glad we got you on this morning. We had a little technical difficulty trying to tune everybody in, but I can see it looks, well, it looks kind of maybe sunny, cloudy, overcast, wherever you're at.
A little overcast here in Dallas.
So how do you communicate? All of you are all over the country, and I'm always amazed how you all come together for this online data marketing communications program. How do they find you, and how do you build this community all over the country here?
Well, that's a good question. I think that they have a pretty good sniffer for the experts out there, and they reached out and said, hey, would you like to be a part of the team? And we get together on a regular basis online, the faculty, to talk about latest trends and what's happening in our classrooms and our students.
So who did you sniff out to bring as your guest today?
Today we have Mr. David Hazelton. And the title of our topic today is going to be Protecting the Brand, the Role of Brand Standards in IMC. And David is a senior professional in the industry and has lots of really interesting things to share with us today.
Okay, well, let's get things going. Are you there, David?
I am.
So give us a quick background on who you are and how you came to be here today.
Absolutely. Well, I'm the design director for ProShares. I'm responsible for the visual aspects of the brand across all channels of our marketing, advertising, whether it's digital or print or anything else that we might do. Also, teach in the IMC program, as you know, at West Virginia University, where I teach the introduction course in IMC.
And before Nathan jumps in, where are you based out of? He's in Dallas. Where are you today?
I'm in Washington, D.C.
Okay, you guys are all over the country here. What's it like in Washington?
It's hot. Summer has come and the humidity has come with it.
Yeah. That's it, and the humidity that comes this summer here. I'll let Nathan jump in. I'm sure he's got a whole bunch of stuff to ask you today here.
Sure. Thanks, David. Today, you know, we're going to talk about protecting the brand and the role of brand standards in IMC. You know, it's difficult enough for a brand to build trust among consumers these days, and having a consistent appearance and tone throughout a brand's integrated marketing communications is critical to that mission, but it can be difficult to maintain. And with that large marketing departments and multiple sources producing content, you know, it's essential to have standards and oversight to ensure a brand speaks with one voice. And in this podcast with David, we're going to talk about how governing a set of brand guidelines can help protect the brand, preserve uniformity, and ultimately build trust. And a lot of this is coming from David, this introduction. So, David, I'd like to start off with asking you the question, you know, when we talk about protecting the brand, from your perspective, what does that mean?
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. You know, I'm always very deliberate when I use the word protecting the brand. There are so many people within an organization that have access to branded materials and the capability to alter or change them. It can be the executive team members, sales team, lots of people outside the marketing department have access to materials. And when you work within an organization that has all those people with the capability to alter the brand, a lot of times they refer to the person in my role as the logo police or the brand cop. Some more negative phrases get used. But I always like to reinforce with them that it's not about being punished for using the brand incorrectly. It's about me teaching them and educating them on how to protect the brand. You know, we know that consumers don't always trust brands as much as they trust other consumers or trust influencers. So the more we can do to increase our brand consistency, the more we do to build that trust. So once you explain that to everyone and really get them on board with the idea of protecting the brand, then they all become sort of brand ambassadors themselves and really get to understand that.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, that having been in that role myself, you definitely get called lots of names, especially if you're trying to keep you know, some people want to really go off, not necessarily off the rails, but have lots of different ideas that aren't necessarily aligned to what the brand is supposed to be. So you're really doing a lot of just reminding them of the standards. So, you know, your statement there, it sounds like brand consistency is really a win-win for everyone. What are the challenges and some of the oppositions that you're running into as you try to protect the brand?
Yeah, well, I think you sort of touched on it. There are so many people that don't want to hurt the brand necessarily, but don't realize what they're doing. And very often, it is the authors of brand content. We have a lot of subject matter experts that are producing content for our marketing. And very often, I'll hear the phrase, well, I want this piece to look special. This one needs to stand out. I don't want this to look like all the other pieces. It's important to make them realize that this inconsistent brand usage can create confusion. It can damage credibility. So what I like to explain to them is that while they bring credibility and gravitas to the marketing materials through their research, through their writing, the other half of that equation is the brand itself. And that also carries a lot of credibility and trust. So we don't want to produce a piece just to make it look different, that looks like a bad brand knockoff or doesn't look like it came from our brand. That's really important to build trust with the consumers and to have that consistent communication throughout everything that you produce. At the end of the day, you know, we're all human beings and we make decisions based on emotion. And probably, and I'm sure you hear this all the time too, Nathan, the number one thing I hear is, I don't like that color, or that's not my favorite color. People yeah. react so emotionally to color, and it's difficult, and I understand what they're saying, but we can't always brand based on emotions. And the example I sometimes use with clients that say that is that, you know, if you think of a company like UPS, I guarantee that brown is nobody's favorite color, especially the shade of brown that those trucks are. But they don't paint the trucks to please, you know, certain people at certain times. And definitely if a hot pink delivery truck came up to your door, you probably wouldn't have the same trust that you would if it was the brown truck that you know and rely on. You would think it was a bad knockoff. Maybe they've subcontracted the services, something. So it's really important to keep all of those brand elements in place to help build that trust and consistency.
So we know we need consistency. What are some of the tools that you're using to maintain that consistency within the organization?
Yeah, well, definitely first and foremost is a brand standards manual. That can come in a few different forms. Generally, it'll include a brand statement that talks about what your brand represents, what your brand's personality is. And then it will also have all of your brand elements in there with the proper way to use them. And those are things like your logos, your corporate fonts, your color palette, and it may also include your writing style and your voice. Now, very often that is in a separate manual. So some organizations will have just a graphic standards manual and then a writing style manual. Sometimes they are combined into a larger brand standards manual that has all of these elements, but that's really critical. Most large organizations are going to have that, but there are some smaller groups, maybe smaller associations and places like that don't have that. And sometimes it's just sort of in the back of the art director's head, and that's where all the brand standards are kept. It's really good to have it in writing, I think, because it gives you really the authority to say, no, it needs to look like this. It's just better to have it written down, especially if you're working with contractors or remote teams. That way everyone can have access to the same information. The other tool that I like to always mention and use to sort of maintain that consistency over time is having a brand audit. And it's really important from time to time to sort of spread out all your materials and look at them. In big marketing departments, a lot of times we just do things quickly because we have to. Occasionally we'll make an exception and use something that maybe is not the right font or not the right color, and we'll say, well, we'll just do it this one time just to get this out the door. So it's important to look at all your materials cohesively at some point and look for the odd man out and see where those things sort of fall apart. One way to do that is to also look at your images. There's so much use of stock photography these days, or stock illustrations also, just because of time and budget. And one thing that people sometimes I see forget to do is really look at the consistent quality of photography. A lot of times people will look at the subject matter. If they are looking for a picture of a person behind a desk or a person with a shopping bag, but they're not looking at the quality of the photo, how it's lit, what the production quality is, and all of those pieces really play a big role in the overall look of things. So you have to keep those in mind as well. And a brand audit is a great opportunity to go through, look through all your pieces, and make sure that they're all standing up to that standard.
I've had experience where we would do an audit, and we called it the one wall. So you get all your creative and marketing from the last month or two from our agencies and the other agencies, and you slap them up on a big wall, and then you can see who's been, you know, playing within the guidelines and who's decided to kind of maybe go off the guardrails a little bit and do some different things. And then as a team, we can say, all right, this fits in to the branding and this one doesn't. And the client would speak into that too. I really enjoyed the one wall exercise, or as you call it, the brand audit. And then I totally agree in terms of the, what you want to give your vendors, what you want to give the clients is at least a PDF with all those standards written down. And I've also had experience with portals, like an online website or an online portal, where you can download the many different documents that would help keep those guidelines clear to all the different players. So, totally agree with those tools that you're putting in place to keep that consistency loud and clear. All right, I think we're getting close to the break. So one more quick, well, I don't know if there's such a thing as a quick question on this topic. We got 2 minutes before the break. All right, so how do you balance keeping a brand consistent while keeping it fresh, right? That's the big grump I hear from my creative team is, if we have to follow these guidelines, we're always going to look the same, and our target market wants something fresh. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, those guardrails are there to help you, not to restrict you too much. They're really guidelines. One thing is just to keep aware of current design trends and to find a way to fit those into your brand standards. You can maintain that same personality of your brand, but not really stray from your guidelines. So what I mean by that is, you know, you have the same personality you've had your whole life, but you're not wearing the same clothes now that you did 10 or 15 years ago. And your brand shouldn't either. There are ways to keep it current while still being true to your brand. And that's important to do. There's also sort of like technical updates that I always caution people about with their brand standards. I remember some years ago when Twitter was just starting to take off, it was probably around 2009, I was working with a client at National Institutes of Health. One of the institutes there came to me and they said, our logo is too big for Twitter. And what they meant by that was that they had a really long name, which made their logo this very horizontal rectangular shape, and it wouldn't fit in the little icon for Twitter. And they said, our brand standards say we can't break up the symbol from the logo type, meaning the picture part of the logo they couldn't use without the words. And so I cautioned them. I said, well, you need to go back and have your brand standards updated for the contemporary times, because while that was written for a certain period, there's all these new uses now, and you really need to address it at that level as well.
Yeah, interesting. We had something similar in that trends are requiring more animation more movement to things like your headers in your email or on your Facebook ads and things like that. So we had to add a whole new level of standards for adding animation recently to our standards guide with the company that we were working with. So you're right, trends definitely require, and I have to stay on top of it and keep that standards guide updated. The branding guidelines really are a living thing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a living, breathing document, and it needs to be updated. I update mine here about every 6 months, maybe a smaller update mid-year, and then at the end of the year in December, we go through sort of a year-end update to everything just to make sure that it's current.
Great. Well, I think we are going to head to the break.
And just a quick break to remind you that today's program is brought to you by the good folks at West Virginia's University Online Data Marketing Communications Program, the first of its kind in the country, a graduate program that focuses on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making. The Data Marketing Communications Program prepares you for your career by learning the most innovative tactics from award-winning faculty like those on the show today. If you want to learn more, it's pretty simple. Just type in these 9 letters, dmc.wvu.edu, which stands for the Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University. And now, back to the show.
Okay, so one of the great things about having someone like you, David, on the line is I bet you have lots of stories. And so I'm wondering if you could maybe tell us a story or give us an example of a poor branding consistency, right? Someone who maybe laid an egg and maybe break that down in terms of how those mistakes were made.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think of someone that I don't want to throw somebody under the bus. My clients are really poor branding.
Change the name to protect the innocent or whatever they say there, right?
Exactly. I think there's one example that I can definitely share. It was some years ago, and we've actually corrected the problem with them, so they're aware of it. But some time ago, we did a project when I was on the agency side with OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration at the Department of Labor. And they knew they had a little problem with their branding, and they needed some help with it. So they called us in, and at that very first meeting, we all sat down at the kickoff meeting, and everyone exchanged business cards, and every one of their business cards looked different. And we sort of joked about it. I mean, almost to the extent that some of them were sort of homemade, and this goes back to what I was talking about, like so many people having access to branded materials and to be able to alter them and create them themselves and things like that. So while they knew they had some branding issues, I don't think they realized how it had permeated into their corporate communications and their business cards, their letterheads, their press releases, all of these things. So we worked with them over a couple of years, I think, and really helped them to correct that. Part of the solution was we actually got them a new logo and then taught them how to use it correctly through a full set of brand standards that we created for them. And in their case, we did exactly what you were mentioning, Nathan, and we created this online toolbox for them because they have so many different offices around the country and different people working on projects. It gave them one place to go online through an internet site. They could download logos. They could download branded PowerPoint templates, branded letterheads, some even like templated, easy to produce marketing materials that didn't really need a full designer's eye. We could create these templates and help them to do this sort of low hanging fruit. It really overall helped them to speak with one voice, and they were very appreciative from that point on. But I never forget that first kickoff meeting with that sort of potpourri of business cards. It really set the tone for everything.
That's funny. You know, the standards can really be that strong baseline as the marketing team thinks about product innovation and launching new things and how they want to, you know, that temptation to be new and different, but also stay within what, you know, the truth of the brand. You know, my little side tangent, my kids are really excited about the Stranger Things season. I think it's season 3 coming out. And there's all this new Coke swag at Target, right? You can go to Target and get new Coke, and you remember how much of a disaster that was for Coke. And you wonder if they had internal documents that said, you know, we're not this thing. Clearly they weren't. And anyway, it's just a relevant topic around the branding thing. So graphic design, right? So we're talking about branding. You mentioned all these different standards, business cards. The guidelines certainly help a team understand the way we look and feel. What do you, and you've been doing this for a long time, so what is the graphic designer's role in the IMC? How has that changed over the years, if at all?
Wow, I've definitely seen a change over the years, and I think you'd probably agree, Nathan. I think graphic design has finally got a seat at the table. I think for years, it was looked at as the last step on a conveyor belt and sort of a technical step, and it was looked at as decoration, not design and being integrated. Can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, well, just make this look pretty before it goes out the door. I think now we're finally at a point where design is more respected and being looked at as a strategic partner in the process. People are bringing design in early in the process, and really allows the designers and the design team to think things through and to think how some concept will apply all the way through an IMC campaign, not just for one element. A lot of times if you do something at the last step to make something look good, it's not going to work for the other pieces in that campaign. And I think we're really at a point now where people are starting to realize that. And I know I'm being invited in, and my team is being invited in early on to sit down and to strategize and to think about how videos are going to work and how certain visual concepts will translate from the video to the print component and all of the pieces that relate with that. And I think that's a good thing. I'm happy to see that we're finally at this point, and I think that IMC is really benefiting from bringing design in early in the process.
I agree. I think too, now that the desire and mandate for data to inform the creative strategy is really an exciting component to what we do, because if we've got useful data that can inform our creative choices, well, now we can really start to test and learn and give consumers what they're looking for as we build out the creative tactics across channels. In your experience, or in your teaching at IMC, WVU, how many of our students are coming in with a graphic design background? Is it a lot? Is it just a little?
You know, that's a good question. It's actually more than I thought, and I'm always happy when I see students come in from a graphic design background. And I will always ask them, why are you choosing IMC if you came from a graphic design background? And so often what I hear is that they're looking for that seat at the table, exactly what we're talking about. So often they have been involved in the greater marketing community sort of peripherally, and they want to be able to speak in that vernacular and to have those conversations and be a part of the broader thinking and the integration that goes with that. So it's refreshing to me to see so many graphic design students come through the program. I probably have three in every course. Now I teach the introduction course, so it's the first class that the students take when they come into the program. Yeah, I probably have, you know, 3 to 4 in every class that come from a design background or some sort of creative video background or something like that. So it's really refreshing to see that for me.
That's great. And it's certainly been my experience. I have a design background, came back to school, went to the IMC program for that very reason. If I'm going to serve marketing teams, I need to know how they think. I need to understand their vernacular. So it was a great investment. All right. Well, I think we are down to it. David, this is really, really informative, very helpful in terms of understanding brand consistencies and the tools we need to see across the organization. So we really appreciate your time. That's how I'll end it off. Thank you very much.
And how does everybody get in touch with David here? That's usually how we end up here. What contact info does he want to give out for today?
Great. Probably the shortest answer for your listeners to remember is davidhazelton.com. If you go on there, there'll be a portal where you can email me, as well as links to my Twitter and LinkedIn right there, davidhazelton.com.
Okay. Good stuff. Any final thoughts or takeaways here?
Gosh, I think just pay attention to your brand. Don't stretch your logo. That's the biggest thing I see. People want to stretch the logo.
That's not the truth. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Bye. You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.